the origin of confusion, I would say, it stretches way back to Genesis 3.
Pastor Trevor Sutton, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion.
Satan tried to inject falsehood into the true word that God had spoken. But in that little statement, did God actually say this? Suddenly we see this swirl of confusion coming into our world.
Learn more about Clearly Christian at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It is a problem that I think many are simply ignorant of. I know that I was for decades and decades. In vitro fertilization sounds like, well, a fancy medical term that's difficult to understand for those of us who are not medical professionals. And then in its basic concept, it seems, well, that's a good idea for people who are infertile or have difficulty conceiving of a child. What is the goal here? The goal here is to have children. What if in reaching that goal, more children are conceived than the couple wants or the medical professionals know how to deal with or care for? What happens then? Well, it's not a hypothetical. It's actually what happens routinely in the in vitro fertilization industry. Joining us to talk about embryo adoption on this Tuesday afternoon, Pastor Jonathan Lang. He's pastor of Our Savior Lutheran Church in Evanston, Wyoming, and St. Paul Lutheran Church in Kemmerer, Wyoming. He's leader of the Wyoming Pastors Network and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Why Parents Should Be Able to Adopt the 700,000 Frozen Embryos IVF Has Left Behind. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you. It's always good to be with you, Todd.
I look back to the beginning of my pastoral ministry, and I believe that for decades I was simply ignorant of the enormous ethical problems involved in vitro fertilization. Were you as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think we all are. And one of the things that is a common response to this article in particular is people writing me and saying, I had no idea. So we just need to get the word out.
What makes IVF, as it is often practiced today, unethical?
Well, there's maybe three levels to talk about that. One of them is the sexual ethic and the keeping the marriage bed undefiled. And, you know, things are taking place in a laboratory, which ought to be taking place between the intimacy of husband and wife. Beyond that, though, there is there's just tons of problems, both in terms of killing embryos and also in injuring embryos. So this article focuses most of its attention on the freezing of embryos and how in IVF practice, typically, in order to save money, many more embryos are created in a petri dish than can possibly be used by the parents, and so they are frozen for the future, and then oftentimes they just remain in that state. And I would point out that we would never, ever freeze an adult under any circumstances, so why don't we even afford that basic care to kids? But then there's another thing that is hardly ever talked about, and that is the fact that to this day, scientists are still completely in the dark, nearly completely in the dark, regarding the whole discipline of epigenetics. Epigenetics is the all the things that surround, it's not just the DNA, which is in the nucleus of a cell, but many other things as well. And they are blind and doing a lot of guesswork with regard to that in order to create, to do the process of IVF. And scientists have known for decades, before Louise Brown was ever conceived and born, that virtually every embryo that has ever been created by IVF, even in the animal kingdom before they started doing so with human beings, they wind up with genetic problems later in life as a direct result of the IVF process. And we need to be aware of that as well.
So entirely laying aside the ethical questions pertaining to how these embryos are being conceived, apart from union of husband and wife, and apart from the enormous ethical considerations of conceiving so-called leftover embryos and then essentially putting them into both a medical and ethical limbo, perhaps for decades, there is also, even for those embryos that are brought to term, future medical implications that really have not even been considered yet.
Correct. Correct. And scientists know about this, but nobody's talking about it, and that's a big concern.
Let's talk in a little bit more detail, if we could, about the industry's attitude toward regulation. This is not a small industry anymore. It's not something that just operates on the fringe of medical science. This is big business, isn't it?
This is big business. There's about a $4 billion business, and the amount of money that comes into these research hospitals by way of government grants makes it big business to experiment on them as well. So yeah, every time there is an opportunity to have a hearing to make some laws to kind of rein in the IVF industry, the boards seem to be stacked with pro-IVF scientists, and they kind of circle the wagons. And it is the strangest thing that even the most liberal countries in Europe have many regulations on IVF, but America still is virtually without regulation. There are some states that have put limits on IVF, but the federal government as such has hardly any.
What is being done to mitigate the plight of the so-called leftover embryos, many of whom are sitting in suspended animation, frozen in liquid nitrogen?
Well, I would have to start by saying, on average, very little. You know, there are 700,000 and more just in the U.S., that are in cold storage. And of those, the HHS, which estimated that about 60,000 are potentially available. That means that their parents would potentially give them up for adoption. But of those, there have been just over 600 embryonic adoptions which have been brought to term since 1997. There's very little of it going on, but that's about the only avenue that I am aware of to take care of these. On the other hand, we have, you know, many millions of dollars that are being poured into research, which is inviting, at least tempting, many researchers to use these frozen embryos for human experiments, which, of course, is horrific and totally unethical, but that's the only other way of, I'm going to use the word use, the only other way of using these embryos is by experimentation. There are advocates for that.
And when we talk about the adoption of these embryos, we're not talking about someone simply taking legal custody of the embryos, but we're talking about these embryos being brought to term, being born, in other words, aren't we?
Well, yes, we are. And I think that we need to draw a line of distinction between ethical embryonic adoption agencies, and then those that are unethical and riding the coattails and playing on the emotions of parents, of potential parents. Because one of the things that is true across the board is that in American law, embryos are not considered persons. And so you cannot carry out an adoption as such under American law. It is really a property rights transfer. But the ethical embryonic adoption agencies nevertheless subject the potential parents to the very same scrutiny that any other adoptive parents would be subjected to. And that's where I draw the line between the ethical agencies and the unethical agencies. There are plenty of agencies that are where the adoption side is kind of complementary to the production side. You know, if we don't have one on hand that you like, we can make one for you. That is not what I would consider embryo adoption, but rather child trafficking. But embryo adoption is those agencies that are actually not looking to kind of scratch an itch that a couple has to have a child, but rather those that are looking out for the best interests of the children in their care.
So basically, how do adoption laws need to change to account for embryo adoption, Pastor Lang?
Well, first and foremost would be to recognize the embryo as a human being, not a potential human being, but a human being. That's the way the adoptions are carried out, I mean, one thing that I learned as I observed this process close at hand is that adoption is not the adoptionist of potential children. But once the adoption has happened, the couple now is the parent of numerous children, all of them in cryogenic storage. And now, as parents with children in cryogenic storage, now it is their responsibility to consider how best to take care of those people in their care. And in the case that I was able to observe, there was some loss. And then there was one who was who lived to term. And these are the heartaches that parents know how to deal with. But the first thing we need to say is that these are people, and the adoption is completed quite apart from the transfer into the womb.
Pastor Jonathan Lang is pastor of Our Savior Lutheran Church in Evanston, Wyoming, and St. Paul Lutheran Church in Kemmerer, Wyoming. He is leader of the Wyoming Pastors Network and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Why Parents Should Be Able to Adopt 700,000 Frozen Embryos IVF Has Left Behind. Read it for yourself at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Lang, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this.
On the other side of the break, we're going to begin a new series. We've had a series on responding to Roman Catholic proof texts and a series on responding to evangelical proof texts. We're starting a new one with Pastor Jordan Cooper right after this, a series responding to Calvinist proof texts. We will take up John chapter 17, 8, and 9, where Jesus talks about praying not for the world, but for those whom you have given me, for they are yours. We'll find out how Calvinism uses this passage from John's Gospel with Pastor Jordan Cooper after this. To get a taste of love, you can call it what you like.
Well, a human nature is what makes you human and not a dog or a fish or a turtle. Your human nature is what sets your ultimate capacities and determines the kind of thing you are. You don't get a human nature in degrees. You either have it or you don't. There's no degree involved.
Scott Klusendorf speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Well, people today are quite willing to concede that you have a human nature. They're willing to concede I do, but they don't want to concede that embryo is. And here's the question you put to them when they challenge you. How do two human parents create offspring that isn't human, but later become so?
You can listen to Scott Klusendorf's presentation, Making the Case for Life, and all the speakers at our 2018 Making the Case conferences on an audio DVD or flash drive. We'll send it to you for a $300 year-end tax-deductible donation. Look for the link at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
With religion in America continuing its historic decline over yet another year, many may wonder, how fares the LCMS? This November, the Lutheran Witness is once again shedding light on the state of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Find the latest on global mercy work, missions, membership statistics, schools, and more in this special edition. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the world through a Lutheran Christian perspective.
In a city known for the latest in songwriting and the performance of music, we offer the sweet sound of the timeless gospel and the historic liturgy in worship. Redeemer Lutheran Church in Nashville, Tennessee is a place where God's people receive the gifts of Christ and sing praises with angels and archangels and all the company of heaven. If you are vacationing in Music City or are moving to the area, please join us for divine service at 10:30. Find out more at redeemernashville.org.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Faith Lutheran, East Wenatchee, Washington. Grace Lutheran, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. St. John's Lutheran, Rosemont, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa. Resurrection Lutheran, Louisville, Kentucky. St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland. St. John Lutheran, New Berlin, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. And Hope Lutheran, Fremont, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.